What's up, everybody? Welcome to SWAT MMA. We're smoking weed. We're talking mixed martial arts. This is episode number 116. I'm Jared here with Paul.
What up?
Coming to you from the fight capital of the world, Las Vegas. Today, we're going to be smoking and talking about the results of UFC 268, BKFC New York. We're going to take a look ahead to BKFC Miami. And we're going to be discussing the greatness of Canelo, which was on display last weekend as he becomes the first ever unified super middleweight boxing champion. Before we get into the combat sports, though, you know what time it is. Grab your weed, fire it up, and let's dive into the weed of the week.
Smoke weed every day.
This week, Paul and I finally got some new weed.
There we go.
Blue Dream is on the menu today, sir, which is a cross of blueberry and haze. And if you're watching on YouTube, you can see that nice fat bud on screen. Blueberry, pretty famous strain.
Yeah.
Blue Dream, pretty famous as well. But blueberry, you know, it's a cross of Purple Tie and regular Tie. And Purple Tie, if you trace that back, is a cross of Chocolate Tie and HOG. Chocolate Tie being an original sativa landrace strain, which is super rare. Mm-hmm. And you know, dude, there was a company here called House of Herbs that was around when we first got legal weed here. And they were fucking growing a Chocolate Tie.
Oh, word.
And then they went out of business. They were like they were like a small boutique company. At least as far as I know, they went out of business.
Yeah.
They were a small boutique grower. Had fucking just one or two dispensaries with their product. Mm-hmm. Only place I've been able to see actual Chocolate Tie in that time. Couldn't find it in Colorado dispensaries. Haven't been able to find it out here since. But anyways, blueberry cross with haze. Haze been around since the 60s as well. Good grief, haze has been around for so long that people don't even actually know its genetics. It's just a mix of Colombian, Mexican, South Indian, and Thai landrace strains. Classic.
It's a classic.
Flavors, right? It's got that nice kind of berry smell. I mean, hence the whole name with blueberry and everything. It's less of a color, more of a smell.
Yep.
Probably one of the fluffier buds we've seen here. Nothing you can really see on the screen.
It's got good taste.
Right. I don't know if it's going to focus on it. Oh, there it goes. Nice juicy bud. I'm going to hit this too. We've also got in this packs right here, I loaded this up with some Tropicana cookies wax.
Word.
I forgot to mention that, but that's freshly loaded as well and ready to go.
Word.
You know, I haven't seen you bring the Puff Coat lately.
Yeah, I haven't been on concentrates as much lately. I'm smoking a lot of flower instead of concentrates. But you're right. I got to get back on it.
Any particular reason, or are you just tired of the lung work?
It's taking concentrates. I just was doing it on like a whole like I don't know. I feel like once you get like to a certain tolerance, you're just taking dab after dab after dab, and it gets beat you up.
That's why I like to switch up the strains that I'm smoking too. I noticed the same thing with like one kind of weed. Like we had that Trapaya Pie for a few weeks, and like after a while, it's like. The shit don't even get me high anymore. But the second I switch to some other weed, boom, it hits me right away.
Mm-hmm.
So it used to be back in the day, like when I'd go to dispensaries in Colorado, at least it was easier then.
Yeah.
I would mix and match. I'd get like 1 gram of this, 1 gram of that, 2 grams of this, instead of just buying a quarter. But I quit doing that when I moved out here and we got legal weed because the fucking pricing, dude. The price is...
They're still not on point yet.
But you know why that is. If your folks listen and you ever come out here to Vegas and you're wondering why, in comparison to other states, legal cannabis, it's so expensive, we have a cap on the number of dispensaries here. And I believe, last I heard, it's 62.
Yeah.
And you compare this to Denver, okay? Denver has 640-something cannabis businesses. Okay, so you can go get an eighth. In a dispensary in Denver for literally $15 to $20.
Yeah.
like as a dispensary price.
Damn.
Which is cheaper than street weed here in Vegas. And you can pay that for a gram here in Las Vegas. All day long, actually.
Yeah.
So, and the average on an eighth is about $50 pre-tax here. And you're looking at $65 after taxes.
Yeah.
And it's just due to that. There's like no fucking competition.
Well, then also in like contrast, you have like Oregon, who's like when they legalized, they freaking passed out, you know, licenses to everybody who applied, and now they're sitting on a fat supply. And you go to Oregon, get a freaking ounce for fucking $78.
That's true. That's absolutely true. They were selling grams in Oregon as low as $4 a gram.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Due to that, they had so much cannabis. That's crazy.
Yeah. Proud of them.
Right. I don't know. I wish the industry here in Vegas wasn't so tightly regulated as it is.
Well, you know what? It's a lot of those like weird little backdoor rules that are like in place that we've talked about this before. But like when weed got legalized in Nevada, like there's a lot of weird deals that went along. Like they're still cutting funds for like schools and shit like that out here, but yet we're sitting on a stockpile of all this money from recreational marijuana, and like. Question is like, where the fuck's it at?
Yeah, they're supposed to use it.
We've got like four stadiums being built, but kids can't still get books and classes. So.
Yeah, we're still in like number 50 in education out here or something like that. It's
shit like that.
I don't understand it either because the cannabis industry is booming here.
Well, not only that, and like if you look at all the other states that had legalized cannabis, all their school funding went up, all their like education programs went up, all like the, you know, the like
anywhere
all the money was just all the money was funneled into the correct places, and I just feel like in Nevada kind of
it's a little weird, isn't it?
Not really, especially when you fucking live in Nevada and we're fucking, you know, scam artist city of the world.
Well, that's the thing. Like, did you see that a new pawn shop license was granted here in the city in the past like 2 weeks? And I had no idea how this process worked. Like, I come from Colorado. You want to open a fucking pawn shop in Colorado, you fucking go open a pawn shop. It's not that big a deal. Like, there's some minor licensing you got to do. Out here, they held an auction. The city held an auction for a pawn shop license.
Really?
The license just to open the pawn shop sold for $2.5 million to the city at auction.
That's crazy.
Yeah. $2.5 million to have the permission to open a pawn shop. Yeah, where did that money go? It just makes you wonder. And it's the same thing, like, some of my friends and I, when legalized cannabis was first coming in here, we looked at the possibility, like, okay, can we pool our money and get one of these licenses? We looked in Colorado, too, and at the time we couldn't do it, but it wasn't crazy.
Yeah.
Out here, it was crazy.
Out here is nuts.
It was like $35,000
for one of them. And there's a giant waiting list, too. Like,
yeah, all in all, it was something at the time around $50,000 just to get a license.
Yeah, it's
before you opened your doors, got any inventory, hired a single employee.
That's nuts.
And I thought that was crazy till now this pawn shop thing rules. Yeah, like $2.5 million.
$2.5 million for a fucking pawn shop? Like, what are we talking about here?
Nuts, man.
Yeah.
But anyway,
boy Rick holding it down, controlling the pawn shop game.
It's fucking something.
Yeah.
But rolling back, Blue Dream here is tasting good today. Hope you folks are smoking on something delicious as well. And let's go ahead and dive into some combat sports, man. I want to start, frankly, with the UFC because I talk a lot of shit here lately about UFC events sucking ass, and this one is good.
This one is really good.
A lot of knockouts, a lot of great fights.
A lot of great fights, yeah. Holy shit.
Action after action after action. I mean, even the prelims, pretty exciting. The pay-per-view opener was incredible.
Incredible. And before that, also, we saw a fucking 5'10" man who weighs 270 pounds fucking wheel kick another man, which was just nuts. Like, I did not understand that.
Yeah, let's start with that for a minute.
Like, freaking Gian Vellante gets retired.
You know, with Chris Barnett.
Freaking wheel kick.
Heavyweight. You do not see very often.
And he's like literally 5'8".
Yeah, he's a short little guy. Let's talk about Gian Vellante. I mean, he was a former middleweight, which I think he was a lot better at 185. And he
was solid at 205.
Or 205, I mean. 205. But he's up to heavyweight now.
And he just looks rough.
He's a little reminiscent of Roy Nelson.
Yeah.
He's got the beer gut going.
Mm-hmm. Big time.
No, he retired. It was his last fight. I'm not trying to talk bad about the guy during his retirement fight, but
that was rough.
I didn't think he was going to be a world champ or anything, but I mean, the guy had a lot of potential.
He did.
He was Weidman's one of his main training partners. Mm-hmm. I thought he was going to just kind of amount to more, and suddenly he's just overweight, KO'd, retired.
Yeah, he was ranked for a good amount of time as well. Yeah, so either way, though, good to him. Yeah.
And Bennett gets a, he got himself a. I'm sorry, Chris Barnett gets a 50K bonus for that wheel kick, which is deserved. And you're that absolutely big weight-wise.
Everyone was just like, what did we just see? Like, what just happened?
yes, sir. A fight that I kind of want to talk about that took place was, I can't remember how to say his name. It was like Nasruddin Imovov. Was fighting Edmund Shahbazyan.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to talk about Shahbazyan for a minute. Because when I think you and I were present for his first fight in the UFC, I mean, at the event, wasn't it? At the.
It was at the Usman RDA
right
card. It was for the. It was on.
The Ultimate Fighter
Ultimate
finale.
Ultimate Fighter finale,
At the Pearl. At the,
yep, at the Pearl at the Palms.
So we're sitting there at the Pearl at the Palms, right?
Yeah.
And this Shahbazyan guy comes in, and we got his family. They're like, four seats over, freaking out.
Yeah.
Right. And then he
looks
comes
really
in.
Good.
And I'm like, and I was super skeptical because I'm like, dude, his head coach
is Edmund Tarverdian. Yeah.
He's training out of Glendale Fight Club. Like, mm-hmm. This dude is a joke. No way. Except he looks great.
Fucking.
And he continues to look good all the way up until these last two fights. And finally, we see the Tarverdian coming out here.
Yeah.
All right. I mean, I'm sorry, but that dude's a joke. I don't believe he should be coaching any MMA fighters, any boxers, anything. I think he ruined Ronda Rousey.
And
Travis Brown. You want to talk about a career killer?
Yeah.
That poor guy followed Ronda over there and then promptly lost all his skills.
Yeah.
Like, I remember when he used to get compared to Dominic Cruz. You want to talk about a heavyweight that could move. People were like, damn, this guy's bouncing all around, doing all this shit, right? He goes to Tarverdian and he loses all his footwork. He gets his ass kicked. He just stands there plodding around. Mm-hmm. And Shahbazyan now, I mean, this is it for him as a contender, is it not? I mean, I'm not saying he's done fighting, but like he was supposed to be hot, gets all the way up to get ranked, it's back-to-back losses. It's another TKO. I mean, he's outstruck 22-42, I believe. Like four sub attempts the guy laid on him.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's rough. It's hot out here for a pimp.
And I'm not surprised.
Yeah.
That dude should find a new gym. Because it looks like he's got
something,
a skill
man.
Set.
Because what? That's what? Three of his last four he's lost. I think he won his last fight.
How could any fighter go train with Edmund Shahbazyan?
You mean Edmund Tarverdian?
I mean, fucking Tarverdian.
Yeah.
I never understand that. I don't understand why Rousey stuck with that guy. I didn't understand, like, maybe she
why
couldn't
would
see
anybody
the forest
go,
for the trees.
Why would anybody go train with fucking the freaking guru, Mr. Whatever his fucking name is. People do.
Oh, Fabia?
Yeah.
Yeah, those two should get together. Like, Tarverdian and Joshua Fabia should make a fucking gym together. Call it, like, We Ruin Fighters, Inc.
No, just keep the name they already have, you know, the gym of...
The School of Self-Awareness.
Self-awareness, you know?
Just call it the Glendale
those guys.
School of Self-Awareness.
But, yeah, it's a rough road for Edmund Shahbazyan.
What about the Phil Hawes versus Chris Curtis middleweight bout that took place? You had Phil Hawes, who's been looking really good.
Yeah.
You got Chris Curtis coming in. It's, I mean, he's like, that's a guy, he's been around for a long time.
Yeah.
He's been trying to get into the UFC for 10 years.
Yeah.
Like, it hasn't worked out for him. He gets here, he's a massive underdog. Fucking Phil is looking dynamite.
Yeah, he was whooping
him. I mean, his striking looked so good. Yeah. We all know Hawes has got good wrestling, right? His striking was so on point. I'm like, God damn. I believe I was texting you. I'm like, God, he's on fire.
Yeah.
And then just flatlined, man. Fucking flatlined. Yeah. And I was actually so happy for Chris Curtis. Like, his interview afterward, he's so, like, excited.
Yeah.
He's so fucking thankful. He's like, dude, I've been waiting 10 years to hear Joe Rogan say my name.
Yeah.
Like, I thought that was really cool.
You gotta love those kind of stories. It's rough for Phil Haas, but he could get it together. It's not like this is the end of his career or anything. Like it was a tough fight, but you gotta love a story like that with a guy who just persevered through tons of adversity and, you know, waited for his turn, and when he finally gets it, was able to, you know,
hell yeah,
cash it in.
And it's a fight no one expected him to win. I think he was like a -300 or +300. I mean,
yeah.
Or Haas was like -300. Either way, it was way out of whack.
Yeah.
And I just felt fucking really good for that dude.
Yeah, for sure.
Like, that put me in a nice one. Like, he was just, you could just see it. Like, some people, I mean, they're happy they win, whatever. Every fighter feels good when they win. But that dude was just radiating. Like, it was like when Conor won his second belt in Madison Square Garden. It was like that kind of goal for him. He was like, I fucking been waiting 10 years. Like, he couldn't believe he's talking to Joe.
Which is why they'll always have a stranglehold on these guys.
Yeah, unfortunately.
Like, I hate to say it.
And, I mean, he was getting whooped. I mean, he only landed 21 punches.
Yeah.
I mean, 48 landed in the first round by Phil Haas, who again was looking sharp. But that was exciting. I don't know what, you know, Curtis is going to do from here, but he obviously packs a punch.
Yeah, we'll see.
We'll see what he's got. He's got a lot of experience. You know, Haas has been a highly touted guy for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And like you said, he's not going anywhere.
And I think we must bring up the elephant in the room.
What's that?
Alex Pereira is a bad man, dog. He's a dangerous, dangerous man.
All right, so for everybody listening, Alex Pereira was a middleweight, made his debut last night, and he is notorious for being a very, very well-respected Glory kickboxing champion and the last man to beat Israel Adesanya back-to-back, I do believe. Yeah. And that's what sent Izzy packing from kickboxing and into the UFC, where he has been a dominant force ever since.
Yeah. One to mixed martial arts, but yeah.
Yeah, into mixed martial arts. I mean, but seeing Pereira was something that everybody was looking forward to, that is in the know about combat sports. That first round was kind of a letdown. I mean, it was nothing but wrestling from his opponent, Andres.
Yeah.
You know, in that round, he got two takedowns, and I mean, he landed like two ground and pound strikes on the guy.
I'd take him down too. What the fuck?
Like, what you have to do.
This you have to, yeah.
One of the most, Pierre is one of the most elite strikers on the planet, which he promptly showed in round two.
And honestly, every single person that Izzy's fought pretty much so far has brought him into their camp, trying to get them to, you know, mimic and all that kind of stuff.
Well, he came out and just laid old boy out with a flying knee.
Yeah.
It was a walk-off, but then the ref didn't call it. And so he came back and landed a couple
unnecessary
shots.
Yeah. Super the ref, necessary, actually.
Until the ref called it off. But
yeah.
Talk about a statement. That's a bad man right there.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm excited about that because middleweight needs some new blood, because Izzy's been a dominant force. You know, much like Usman, who we'll talk about later, he's kind of running out of guys. Like, he's lapped the contenders a bit now. He's done the rematches.
But the question becomes, though, how quick do you move his, you know, level of competition up? Because he is a little bit older. He does have an established name. Like, do you just go ahead and throw him in with a top 10 guy next? Or, like, what do you think they do with him?
I actually think that you match him very carefully with someone who's not going to give him too much of a wrestling game.
Yeah.
And who's in the top 10, and if he wins that, then you throw him in with Izzy, because Izzy's not going to take him down either.
Well, here's the thing, though, too, is there's definitely, like, a certain list of opponents at middleweight that you should just not let him fight. Like, you know what I mean? Like we don't want to see him with any of the wrestlers. We don't want to see, like, I need to see him, like, I just want to see him and Izzy at this point.
Well, I think that's what that's most everybody's thinking. Yeah. And due to the kind of the situation that Adesanya is in with his opponents at middleweight, I think it's okay for that to happen. And because the wrestling's not going to be a factor, most likely, in a matchup between him and Adesanya, then who cares if the guy can stop takedowns or whatever? Like,
what if Izzy just flipped the whole script and took him down?
Fast-track him. That'd be crazy.
Because, I mean, he does have some very improved wrestling compared to how when he started in mixed martial arts.
And I would imagine, in comparison to this guy, his wrestling will be dramatically better.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm just taking a guess. But I say fast-track him to a title shot and keep him away from wrestlers.
Yeah, it's probably the best-case scenario, I'd say.
No, I don't know who in the top 10 is really, you know, Costa maybe?
Yeah, but I don't think Costa takes that fight right now.
Sean Strickland is not much of a wrestler.
Sean Strickland Darren Till. Will fucking throw hands.
Darren Till.
Uriah Hall. Yeah, Uriah Hall would actually be a good one. Him and Uriah Hall should run it. That's like a preview to what him and Izzy could be.
I think, you know, some of these other guys, like, they're out of the situation, but Vittori would just wrestle him.
Yeah.
Cannoneer's going to wrestle him. Brunson clearly would wrestle him.
Yeah.
And I just don't care if this guy can beat any of those contenders right now.
Who I just want to see him and Izzy.
Right. That's all I care about.
That's really where it is.
I mean, I don't see anybody who that would be stepping on when you look at the top 10. And we've got Robert Whittaker probably.
Who knows what they were in that
bag. Then the next up is Vittori, then Cannoneer, Brunson, Costa, Hermanson, Strickland, Till, Gastelum, Hall.
Yep.
I say fast track the man.
Stick
in there with Darren Till. If Darren Till beats him, good. If not, I mean, Darren Till's not going to wrestle him much either.
No.
Of course, the last thing Till needs in his career is another loss right
now. That's exactly what I was thinking. Like, I just don't see it. There's like a certain, that whole list of guys you just named, like, I just don't see them taking that fight, is what I'm saying. There's a, like, a gridlock at middleweight in the top 10. And I feel like everybody kind of is trying to hold their spot.
Strickland will take that fight.
Oh, yeah, Strickland will take it. That'd be interesting, him and Strickland.
I mean, he just lost that fight with Rockhold. Did they fill in?
No, I think he's waiting for it. Right? I think he's trying to wait for Rockhold, but who knows if that fight happens or not. Well, one thing I do want to talk about is how the main card kicked off. Just a fucking war.
What are you talking about? Main card? Is there an exciting fight to start the main card?
Yeah. Justin Gaethje and Michael Chandler went to fucking war.
A couple 155-pound guys basically fighting, despite what Daniel Cormier's dumbass says, for the number one spot.
I don't think so, actually. I don't think either of them gets the title shot next.
That's what literally everybody has said, from Dana to fucking both of them.
Yeah, but lightweight is a fucking is such a fickle division when it comes to contenders. Like, you,
we'll see.
It's such a what have you done for me lately? Like, fucking, I hate to say it, but like Poirier could win the belt and be like, Conor, let's run it a fifth time or fourth time or whatever time they ran it. You know what I mean? Like, literally, that could happen, and then Gaethje's left out in the cold. Or let's say, I don't know. No, like, literally, that could happen. And, like, and that's the thing is, also, you got people waiting in the wings, like Beneil Dariush and people like that. Like, if Gaethje chooses, like, let's just say that the Poirier and Dubronx fight is, like, a complete war, and they have to take some time off. That no longer makes that fight last Saturday a number one contenders fight, because then that means there's going to have to be some kind of, you know, in-between number one contender fight, because you got Islam Makhachev, who supposedly thinks he deserves a belt. You got
at some point, you do revert to the rankings. I mean, Makhachev's ranked fourth. Gaethje's ranked first after Poirier, who's already getting the title shot. And Gaethje's coming off a win over the number five guy.
Yeah.
I mean,
I agree, but I'm just saying Islam's
coming off a win over Dan Hooker.
I'm just saying the timetable could fuck everything up. Like, if the title fight that happens in December for the lightweight title is a war, and either guy has to take an extended period of time off, I don't see this as being the number one contender fight.
Well, on paper it was. I guess that's all I was trying to say.
I get it, but it was two of the best guys in the division for sure. Man, fucking Michael Chandler, dude. He's in there for a good time, not a long time for sure. Like straight up. Like, his UFC career has been fucking fire, but he's fucking 1-2. Like, legitimately.
Yeah, this shit surprisingly went to a decision. I mean, I
didn't see that. Yeah, I thought one of them was getting finished.
It wasn't for a lack of effort from either one of them. Jesus, I mean, Christ. 116 to 103 on punches thrown in favor of Gaethje. Gaethje did get a big knockdown.
Yeah.
Although Chandler had
some good takedowns.
He had a takedown.
It was like mixed results, though, because there was a lot that Gaethje stuffed that kind of like nullified that one takedown.
And there was a lot of heavy, heavy, heavy blows from both guys.
Yeah. Yeah, some of them, like, where, like, both them just have the most ridiculous chins on planet Earth that they were able to survive. Like, I don't know how Chandler didn't get finished off that uppercut. Literally took him off both his feet. He literally got uppercutted, fucking flies in the air backwards, and rolls over to his face. Like, it was exactly the scenario that Pitbull finished him in. When he dropped him, and they stepped in when Chandler was, like, on his hands, on all fours, like, trying to dodge punches.
Yeah.
That's exactly what he was in. This time he was able to survive. I don't know how.
There was one situation that was just, it illustrates these two fighters, especially Gaethje's mentality a lot. Chandler came in for a takedown. Gaethje stuffed it, all right, and they both wind up on their knees, but Gaethje's got a headlock on him, and Chandler is getting up, and he's on all fours, and his neck is right there, and Gaethje's arms are kind of around his neck as well, and the choke and an anaconda is there, like, all day long.
Yeah.
Like, and Gaethje didn't even attempt to think of possibly choking. He just fucking stood up.
I think that's more of a respect thing, though.
Like, it was at the bare minimum a clear sub-attempt opportunity, and it was like, nah, I'm good.
Well, that's the thing, though, is I do think that is more of a respect thing, because I do think that he knows that, let's say he doesn't get that sub, and he ends up, like, let's say he pulls a guillotine or something like that where he ends up giving up position, then you have a fucking high-level wrestler like Michael Chandler on top of you, possibly in half mount, could be even, you know what I mean, in a real sticky situation. So I think that's more of a game plan thing than Justin Gaethje just being stupid.
I didn't think he was being stupid. I think he was just making a choice to forego a sub-attempt to get back to your feet so you can get back to banging.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, that's what I mean by stupid. He was fighting, like, old-school Gaethje. Like, old-school Gaethje for sure. That was just let's exchange for three rounds. I wish that was five, low-key.
And that brings up an interesting point, because that would have been a five-round fight. They were offered a main event status, not on this card, but as another card. And, you know, Gaethje turned it down. From what I understand, he turned it down because he said, I get paid the same amount of money for a three-rounder as I do for a five-rounder, so why would I want to go do a five-round war with Michael Chandler when I can get paid the same doing a three-round war?
I agree.
And I'm, once again, the fan in me is bummed.
Yeah.
But, yes, that's what all you people should be doing. Just like O'Malley.
I was just going to say.
Like,
Patty Pimblett
saying these things.
Yep.
All
those guys. That's what you should be doing. And they're right. Yes. I mean, at the end of the day. Everybody's got a price, you know?
But yeah, could you imagine if that shit was 5 rounds?
That's a fight I could possibly see as a rematch down the road.
I wonder what Chandler's going to do for me, because you're right, he is 1-2 in the UFC, but he's still
right in the mix, though. Like, he literally just had a... I wouldn't say it was the closest decision, but, like, if you take the knockdown out of it, that's a fucking really close split decision.
And his entry here to the UFC reminds me actually of Gaethje's, because he came in and he also, I believe, went 1-2 in his early, but he was still, like, right in the mix and a very serious contender despite losing those fights, you know.
I'd say the only difference is, though, is Chandler's, he's, like I said, not in here for a long time, but a good time, because he's, like, what, 36? Something like that? He's getting up there in his years. So the question becomes, how long can he continue to do this? Because he's obviously a very entertaining fighter, and the UFC will definitely re-sign him if it comes. Like, I don't know how long his deal is, but I'd imagine after seeing what they've seen, he's very entertaining. He brings numbers. He has very, very freaking... he literally has probably the two round of the years in his back-to-back fights. Both of them were losses, yeah. But we're talking round of the year. Freaking...
Oh, and he was a...
First round.
A hair away from fights. Winning the title. Oliveira was...
Oliveira was done.
He was done. I
don't know how he survived.
Me neither.
Same thing with... Same thing with Gaethje. I don't know how Gaethje didn't go down, man. He hit him with some fucking bombs.
Yeah.
Like, straight up bombs.
So, I can't help but, you know, you brought Conor up earlier and how they could, you know, give him a title shot when he comes back, too. Dude, seeing guys like this, like, these guys will fuck Conor up these days. I'm sorry. Fucking love Conor, but he's past it, man.
I think him and Chandler would be a very, very bad night for him.
Yeah, man. He don't have the fucking hunger to beat these guys no more. These guys are fucking animals. If it was Conor that fought Eddie Alvarez, yeah, he'd piece them both up. But that Conor ain't around no more. That's trying to accomplish his goals, Conor.
Yeah.
Not rich pimp Conor. I hope that doesn't happen. I don't.
That's fighting. That's what that is.
Yes, sir.
It's the fight game.
But that was an awesome way to start the card. Mm-hmm. The next fight, I guess, was good. I missed a lot of it, frankly. I was having problems with my feet. It kept pausing on me. But the Shane Burgos versus was it Billy Quantillo?
Yeah. Montillo? You know, Hurricane Shane just continues to do what he always does, and that's put on a show. That he's the kind of guy that, like, put him in there with anybody. It's going to be a hell of a fight. He just puts a pace on people that is just, you just don't see that every day. You know what I mean? I know he's like a smaller guy, so a lot of them, like.
Yeah, these are featherweights.
A lot of featherweights. But I was like, dude, to freaking land 193 strikes in a 3-round fight? Are you fucking kidding me? That's ridiculous. That pace is unmatched. Yeah, they were going
down. I mean, a 164 from Billy.
Yeah.
And these guys are. Over 300 strikes, almost 400
yeah.
between the two of them.
It was a good comeback after that really scary knockout in his last fight, too.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But very exciting fight. Another, you know, the Gaethje and this fight were both decisions, but so incredibly exciting that you weren't bummed there wasn't a knockout, you know. But talking about knockout, we did see one in the next fight up on the card, which is Marlon Vera versus Frankie Edgar at bantamweight, mm-hmm. Which saw Vera win by a third-round front kick KO reminiscent of Anderson Silva knocking out Vitor Belfort.
Mm-hmm.
It was a kick that Joe Rogan actually called. Multiple times during the broadcast, he noted that Frankie Edgar was wide open for that kick. He was standing a little square in front of Vera. And I had Frankie win in that fight, you know, 2-0 going into the third.
Yeah.
But if you want to see something really scary, folks, Google the YouTube image, or I'm sorry, the fight image of Frankie getting kicked in the face. There's been several people who've captured the foot just as it hits his face
right,
and then frozen it and blown it up. And I've never seen anybody's face look like that.
Looked I like thought a frog. It
was doctored.
Yeah.
Yeah, it looked like a frog or some kind of monkey man or something.
Yeah, it was fucking awful.
I don't want to see Ate anybody's face ever look like that. It made me think Frankie should retire seeing that photo.
Yeah, that's a conversation I think that him and his management really need to have. Like, that's
he's 40 rough. Years old.
40 years old. He's been knocked out 5 times in the last 4 years.
And it's a years. Guy that was known for his iron chin.
Yeah, never had been knocked out before the Brian Ortega fight. And since then, every single time he gets knocked out, it's absolutely devastating. Like, it's hard to watch.
It is.
Compared to that one, to the Corey Sandhagen one, which is hard to watch, the Korean Zombie one's hard to watch, the Brian Ortega one's hard to watch. Like, all those are fucking, like, really, like, vicious knockouts.
And they're happening regularly, unfortunately.
Yeah, I mean, they're starting.
And it's not that Frankie sucks. He's right there in the mix. Like, he was winning this fight.
Absolutely.
It's just, I don't want to see it anymore. I think he should retire. Mm-hmm. I don't know what kind of manager Ali is when it comes to things like that. I mean, I talk a lot of shit about that guy, but I don't know if he encourages fighters to keep going past their prime or if he encourages them to maybe reassess. But people who care about Frankie should be encouraging him to reassess.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it is what it is, you know? That's just kind of where it's at. All right, well, let's talk about the co-main event. We had Rose Namajunas win a split decision over Zhang Weili in a really really tough fight, you know?
It was a good fight. I thought the split decision was crazy, but
whatever. Yeah, I think it was clear 3-2, but
yeah, I thought it was a clear 3-2 as well. Mm-hmm. I mean, Rose really put it on in the last couple rounds. I had
you know, Zhang came out strong, though.
Yeah, I had her up 2-1 at one point, and I thought she was going to win the fight. I mean, she came out really a lot more impressive than I was expecting.
Mm-hmm.
But Rose showed her championship material, her championship heart.
Yeah.
And
you know what? This kind of reminds me of when she fought Joanna, you know what I mean? Where it was like the first one was a real flash knockout, and everyone was like, oh, all surprised. And then she solidified her victory. This is kind of where I feel like this one was, too. Like,
yeah, it was odd,
like,
isn't it?
Yeah, like she got the crazy first knockout with the head kick, and then everyone was kind of like, ah, well, let's see if she can actually pull it off again, you know. And I feel like she really like solidified herself as the champion of the division. And I feel like it's kind of weird because, like, I feel like Rose almost has to, like, solidify it to herself, too. Like she was, like, so – I feel like she was so much more happy about this victory than the first one. Like, the first one, I feel like she was more shocked that she did it. She was like, yeah, I'm the best. But, like, this time it was more like she came in with, like, a mentality of, like, I already know I'm the best. Now let's go show everybody. You know what I mean?
Rose is an anomaly. She's a mixture of so many warring personalities, it seems.
Yeah.
Like she's a real sweet person. She's a real killer in the cage. Yet she seems to have an incredible lack of self-confidence at times that is shocking for a fighter.
Yeah.
Like, I don't mean any disrespect. Like, she is one of my very favorite fighters. She has been since her Invicta days, well before she was on the UFC radar. I knew who fucking Rose Namajunas was.
Yeah.
And I'm not trying to throw shade at her, but it's just like, look how affected she was over the Conor bus attack. Like, she would, like, had to go to counseling. She fucking didn't want to leave the house. Like, that shit fucked her all up. And, like really?
Yeah.
Like, you get in a cage and, like, fight people for a living. Shit that, like, it's normal crazy. Women definitely cannot do.
Mm-hmm.
So, she's such a weird mix. And you're right. Last time she was doing the whole I'm the best. Because she seems to have that self-confidence problem.
Yeah.
But when she's dialed in, dude, she is the fucking best.
Yeah.
I think she's the best in the division. I think it's weird that when she beat Joanna, she had to beat her again.
She had to do it again this time, too.
Yeah,
this time
I don't think it was
a weird
thing because Joanna was dominant. But this time, I think it was weird that now she comes in and beats a champ. And now I thought it was disrespectful she had to fight Weili a second time right away. Like, almost like, ah, you just got lucky. Let's see you do that again.
I mean, it was a good fight, though. I mean, I think it was less, I don't know. I think it was less of like a, you're not as dominant, and more of like a, Zhang Weili is such a big star to the UFC now. Kind of like when Cody Garbrandt got an immediate rematch with TJ. Like, that wasn't necessarily really what had to happen for the division. But, like, when you hit a certain level of stardom in the UFC's bank account, you get whatever rematch you want. Like, you know,
I disagree with her being a star like Cody Garbrandt or whatever. Like, she is not a star. It's that she is the only significant fighter from a country that has a large base that the UFC wants to sell their product to, despite the fact that, you know, they're a country that is employing slave labor and communist and regulates that very woman that we saw fight is only allowed to have one child should she, you know, decide to have a child.
Yeah.
I mean, they're a shitbag fucking country, but the UFC wants their money so bad, they tell us she's a star and give her a rematch. There's nothing in pay-per-view that would indicate that she's crushing it.
I mean, I'm not saying that. I'm just saying exactly like what I was saying before. Like, neither was Cody Garbrandt. Cody Garbrandt was a huge star, but what he did was he was the UFC champion, and the UFC put a bunch of money behind him. So as soon as he lost, they were at a point where they're like, oh, shit, we put a bunch of money behind somebody, and now they lost. We need to give him a rematch and make sure that loss really, like, mattered, because we put all this money behind this person, and we're not getting our investment back. Might as well run it back and see if we can still keep it going. And that's what they've done throughout the history of, like, of their promotion. When they put a lot of hype and a lot of money behind people, they'll give them anything they want.
Yeah, I'm not disagreeing with that. I don't know. I'm not seeing the comparison there between the two, but I get your point. It's just I didn't agree with the rematch to begin with.
But I didn't either, Rose it is did what good. It is.
I disagree greatly with the commentating team after she won, saying that there's nothing exciting for her at 115 now. I think that's ridiculous, because you've got Carla Esparza on a 5-fight win streak, who was the inaugural champion, who beat who to win the title?
Rose. Yeah.
How is that not a story? Now Rose has come full circle as the champ, and it's Carla whose game has evolved, gotten better.
Yeah, but that's the problem, though, dude. It's like,
that's a great fight.
It's a great fight, but like nobody likes Carla. I don't know why.
Dude, I like Carla. I like Carla better than Weili Zhang. I mean, I don't have a problem with her, but I'm saying,
her fighting style.
Far more.
Like her fighting style is much less. Person. It's much more like grind it out, like take you down, and you know how it is.
Well, that's what she does, but she's gotten better. I mean, her striking is better than it was like when her and Rose came together the first time. And Rose is fucking 2-1 at that point. I mean, she had those the tough fights that gave her a little bit more experience, but like. Than a record would indicate, but I think that's a good fight. I think it's a good storyline, and I'm just saying I disagreed completely with Cormier and Rogan saying there was like nothing to do for her to do now.
Definitely not.
Like,
dude, there's nothing.
You guys might not find as exciting as the male divisions, but there's definitely something brewing in her division for her to attend to.
Yeah, for sure.
So
that's without a doubt. There's always going to be contenders.
There's Tatiana Suarez in the mix.
But I think she's going to 25 now after her injury.
You know,
could happen.
But things happen. You know, by the time they get through with the Esparza Nama Yunus fight, there'll be something else.
Yeah. Exactly. Well, that's the thing. It's like, just like when Joanna was champion, there was always a contender up and coming, and there always will be a contender up and coming. This is the UFC. There's fucking fights every weekend. It means people who are ranked are fighting every weekend. Every time there's some crazy knockout or something like that happens, we're going to see a contender rise, and that's who she'll fight next is really what it comes down to.
And speaking of Joanna, she was removed from those very same rankings that we're discussing. Yep. So she's kind of out of that picture, but she says she's not going to fight anyways until she gets paid more. So.
And she wants a title shot, which makes no sense. I'm sorry. She was dominant when she fights like ranked competition, but like title shot after, I get it. Her and Wei Li was a very close fight, but they can run it back. Neither of them are champion right now. Run it back. Go ahead for the number one contender.
Oh, God. No. They can't have another third fight with Nama Yunus.
Or either of them.
Just have them fight. Maybe not for a number one contender.
But
fight.
Honestly.
Maybe if Joanna wins, it'd be number one contender.
But that's the thing, though, is like at that weight class, I don't see really anybody beating either of those two. And then those two have had, I would see them having probably a very close fight in the next fight, too. You know what I mean? That's that weird. I feel like there's a few fighters in a few different divisions that are like that. Like, this kind of ties into the main event. Like, Colby's like that. Like, Marvin Vettori is kind of like that. Like, there's guys that we have seen fought for the title twice recently that are, I would say, leaps and bounds better than a lot of the guys in the division and or women. That they're going to continue to beat these people. But no one's going to be clamoring to see them fight for the title again.
They just have to do something. Shelby's got to do some better.
He's
got to
do something there because, you know, at 15 is like that. We have two contenders now that Rose has beat twice. You know what I mean?
you kind of have that in the men's featherweight division. I mean, what do you do with Max if he wins? Max, if he gives him another fucking title shot?
Exactly. Same thing with Marvin Vettori. Marvin Vettori looked great against Paulo Costa, but what, you're going to throw him in there with Izzy for a third time? No. Like, you know what I mean? There's...
But, I mean, if we do look at, you know, the women's strawweight, though, after Esparza, you've got Mariana Rodriguez, you got Young, I'm not sure how to say her last name, Xing Yang, Mackenzie Dern, although Dern didn't look too good in her last one, Nina Nunes. Yeah. I mean, there's a couple names in there. Amanda Hibas.
Yeah.
You know, she could come out of that. How is Felice Herrig still in the rankings? Does she fight anymore?
Yeah, she did. I think she won her last fight.
Pre-COVID? Back in 2019?
I don't know.
I like her. I thought she retired. I'm surprised to see her in the ranking.
But yeah, you know what I mean? It's kind of... I feel like there almost needs to be someone brought in from the outside who maybe has made... Like, maybe some kind of signing to bring someone in. You know what I mean? Wouldn't be a bad idea. Someone from Invicta, maybe. You know?
They bring in... They don't seem to bring in as many fighters from Invicta as I thought they would when they did that deal to put them on Fight Pass and everything. I thought it would be a lot more of a feeder organization than it... I mean, it is a little...
But none of them have really turned into anything like... Like, obviously, that. Don't get me wrong. There's a lot of people from Invicta that have done well in the UFC. I just mean, as of late, there really hasn't been any, like, big talent that's come in and made a huge splash. Probably the last one would be Megan Anderson, probably. But, yeah, so.
Well, it was a great fight for Rose.
Yeah.
She's once again firmly established. The only repeat champion in that division.
So far.
And well on her way to solidifying herself as a possible great at 115. Which brings us to the title fight, though, Paul. We've got Kamaru Usman, Colby Covington, another rematch, and another great fight,
frankly.
We saw Usman get the decision win.
Mm-hmm.
Frankly, I had it scored a draw, but whatever. I'm not mad about it. It was a great fight.
Yeah, it was just one of those fights where you could have scored every round either way, kind of.
Yeah, I had it a draw. I gave Colby the last three rounds.
Yeah.
And I gave Usman a 10-8 second round. Although, I will say the third round was razor.
Yeah. I mean, that's why it all comes down to
that. I just went with Colby because that was my personal opinion for that round. But I thought he clearly won rounds 4 and 5.
I think 1 and 2 were clearly Usman and 4 and 5 were clearly Colby. Mm-hmm. And round 3 is where things go tilt one way or another. Like that 49-46 one.
But the other two were
48-47, and that's where 48%. I thought it was at. I do think it really comes down to the second and third round, because the second round with the two knockdowns, you could easily score that a 10-8, because Usman was handling all the exchanges leading up to that as well. And then the two knockdowns back to back like that. And most judges would score that a 10-8.
Yet none of them did.
Which makes no sense, you know.
Two knockdowns. All of them are idiots. I mean, one knockdown in boxing is a 10-8. And that's only relevant because this fucking scoring system comes from boxing.
Yeah. Which makes no sense.
So you would think two knockdowns, you'd at least get a 10-8.
And then in the third round, I agree with you. Super razor thin, but like that last ending sequence with the takedown. As a wrestler, I agree with DC. That is a takedown. Anytime, you know.
Colby getting Usman.
It's a takedown.
His knees hit the canvas.
Yeah, his knees. You know. He's on his knees and his hands, and he got it behind him. Was there control? No. Like, there was no control time that attributed to that takedown, which is where that new scoring comes into play, and we're in New York, so who knows what the fuck they're doing over there. They're literally probably the worst commission in the U.S. when it comes to MMA, at least. Boxing is another thing, but MMA, they are the worst by far.
Yes.
So who knows what the scoring system was on that night, because technically, due to the new hybrid system that they have been using, a takedown with no control is seen the same as a punch. So, I don't know.
Those of you listening that might say hybrid system, what are you talking about? I'll just summarize real quick. Only in MMA do you have individual commissions who, some commissions follow an old rule set. Some commissions follow a new rule set that was implemented a couple years ago. And some commissions follow a hybrid rule set where they take some of the old rules and some of the new rules and they fucking mix them together.
Yeah.
And that's the sport we're talking about.
Yeah.
Imagine if they did that in football.
Yeah.
You know, when you played basketball, in Cleveland, there's one set of rules.
Yeah.
But then when you're out in Cali, it's slightly different rules. But then when you go to Denver, it's a mixture of both the rules.
Yeah.
Jeez. People would be like, what the fuck are you ass clowns doing?
Yeah, exactly.
That's what we have in mixed martial arts.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
So, do you think the scoring system is a big question here? Because, like, we both agree. I think round two is a 10-8. Mm-hmm. Colby definitely lost the exchanges and then gets knocked down twice. Like, obvious 10-8. Round three is really where it comes down to it, because Colby was landing, but Usman was answering everything, and his head movement could have been the difference. Because even some of the punches that Colby was landing, they were glancing blows, because Usman was moving his head better than I think I've ever seen him move his head in a fight.
And his jabbing was nice.
His jab, yeah. He looked, it was a GSP-esque performance, where it was like he never really pushed on the gas hard enough to, like, we both agree, I think he could have finished Colby at the beginning of the third round if he would have really, like, stepped on the gas. But
I thought that it was. I remember telling you, I was like, I think this is it. I think he's going to fucking,
yeah,
you know, he's going to swarm Colby when he comes out, and he's going to end it here.
But in, like, a GSP-esque type way, he didn't finish the fight. He stayed with the game plan, stayed behind his jab, and let the judges Even if you scored against him, like you were saying earlier, like, even if you scored against him, you couldn't, like, really look at it and be like, oh, Colby clearly won the fight. I don't think
I thought it was very close in the third. I gave it to Colby because, yeah, I just thought his punches were actually harder.
Yeah.
I thought he was really landing some blows. And then that takedown at the end of the round just sealed it. It was like, okay, all right, that's your round.
Yeah.
But, you know, it was a great fight.
You know what I think was the real difference, though, in this fight was, I think Colby almost, like, put himself behind. Like, in the first two rounds, like, whereas, like, in the Robbie fight, the Tyron fight, and pretty much every fight he's had since he's been this new Colby Covington, he usually starts the fight with the pace. Like, he's the one pushing the pace. He's the one, like, He usually puts a pretty solid output in the first round.
His pace was noticeably slower.
Way slower. He like, waited for Usman and kind of was, like, it looked like he was, like, trying to see what Usman was going to throw at him before he started his, like, offense.
Look, fighters always seem to have excuses afterwards, so take this with a grain of salt. But you had mentioned some online chatter that he was looking weird in the early rounds, like off, not standing funny. Yeah.
He broke his foot, I guess.
Well, no, I heard he said he got hit in the back of the head very hard that left him fucking dazed. He said he took two shots right on the back of the head that he had specifically talked to the referee before the fight about, and then he said it happened in the fight, and he said it left him dazed and weird in the first couple of rounds, which, or maybe it's bullshit, maybe it's not, but if you take it at face value, then you look at his output, which is significantly lower. Like, he's always a machine. He threw 107 punches in five rounds, which might sound like a lot, but, you know, we just talked about, you know, Shane Burgos throwing 193 or landing 193 in three rounds. That's typically what Colby does.
Yeah, he holds the record for the most landed strikes in a welterweight fight.
Yeah, he's got an endless gas tank and just pressures and throws and pressures and throws.
Yeah.
And he was not doing any of that till really starting in the third round. He picked it up, and then the fourth and the fifth. So, whatever.
You know what also is, like, this is very stupid, and I know it's stupid, but I'm just going to say it. I do think in this fight, too, like you were saying that you thought, like, Colby's shots were landing better. I know he got cut from a headbutt, but, like, I do think when you're a judge and you're seeing really close rounds like that, and Usman literally doesn't really look very damaged compared to Colby, like, all bloodied up, and he was pretty beat up, like, to the body, too. And I was just like looking at it, and I was like, look at those two guys and tell me who won the fight. Mm-hmm. I would tell you Kamaru won the fight just based off of the knockdown, the two knockdowns, and how much damage it looked like he put on Colby. I would say Usman won.
I can see that line of thinking, although, I mean, that cut did come from an accidental headbutt.
But yeah, it was a good fight, though. I wouldn't, like, this is another one, like, he's in a weird spot now. Like,
dude, Colby Covington, without a doubt, would be the champion of this division if Usman wasn't here.
Yeah, Ollie Frazier situation.
Yeah, Colby took offense to that, you know, because he wants to be Ali.
Yeah.
you know what I mean? Nobody wants to be fucking Frazier in that scenario, and I get it if you're the guy. Mm-hmm. Everybody else looks at that like, no, those were great guys, but if you're the one they're calling Frazier and your goal was to be Ali, I get it.
Everyone wants to be Jones. But, nobody wants to be DC.
Right. Exactly. So I don't know what's next for him, because I think he could beat anybody else if he's got the desire in the division.
I think naturally he's going to fight Masvidal next. That's the only fight that makes any sense to me.
Yeah, I don't think Masvidal's going to get past Leon, though. You think?
I don't. He said he'll take the fight even if he loses.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. Well,
he said that it's a rivalry that has to be settled in the cage.
I mean, unless something were to happen dramatically to Colby, he'll whoop Masvidal's ass.
I think so,
six
too.
Ways from fucking Sunday, bro.
Unless Masvidal hits him with, like, a big shot and flash KOs him. That's the only thing I could see happening.
Yeah, maybe.
That's the thing is, when you talk about that fight, I feel like there's plenty of clear paths to victory for Colby, but there's literally one for Masvidal, and I think that's knocking him out cold. You know what I mean? Because he's not going to out-grapple him. He's not going to have a better gas tank than him, but he could have hit him with something he doesn't see coming. You know what I mean?
Usman, I have an idea as for what's next.
What's that?
What do you think is next?
Vicente Luque was signed on as the alternate for this fight.
Mm-hmm.
So naturally, I would think he's the number one contender.
Would think. I mean, I can see that part of the way. Although, they were recently trying to match him up with Diaz.
Yeah.
But
now they're trying to get Khamzat with Diaz.
Yeah, that ain't happening. But that does bring up what I think is the most natural thing to do, being that, yeah, okay, there's the possibility of Luque. All right, and most people listening to that are going, who?
Yeah.
Okay, or you've got Neil Magny, who is publicly calling out Chimaev. You've got, for the December 18th fight, you've got Chimaev ranked 11th now, Magny ranked 8th. Now, you've also got Diaz, like you said, in there. But all that is, bro, all that is Diaz is on the last fight of his contract, and Dana's trying to fucking devalue him as much as humanly possible by giving him the worst matchup that could be made for Nate Diaz as his final fight.
Mm-hmm.
So he looks like shit going out the door. Or he turns it down and his contract is extended by 6 months, which is this nasty little clause the UFC has. Like, I firmly believe that's what that is, because that fight makes no sense for Chimaev. Why? Like, Diaz has lost two fights in a row and he's not ranked at welterweight. Why
He's called him out. Called him out, right?
I don't know, that shit's so small. I'll show you who the real gangster is. Like, dude, you're a badass fighter, dude. You're not a gangster, bro. Not a gangster.
Dude, that dude's a savage.
A gangster will pull out a gun and shoot you in your fucking head if you try to fight him. Yeah. You are a badass fighter.
Yeah.
Much as I don't like his ass.
Dude, he's
so dangerous. Give him, make that fight, okay? And if he beats 8th ranked Neil Magny, fucking just throw Khamzat at fucking
already
Usman for the title shot. Yeah, why not? Usman's beat everybody else but Luque, and
Luque and him used to be teammates, too, so I could see it being like a similar, like a Gilbert Burns situation where they've just trained with each other so much that it's just not really going to change, you know what I mean?
Why not? The guy will probably steamroll Magny.
That's a big fight, too. That would have a lot of eyes on it.
It would. Dana loves the guy, apparently.
Yeah.
All right, and I would... I would be interested. I mean, if he could beat Neil Magny, who is a solid, legit top 10 fighter.
If he did what he did to Li Jiliang to deal Magny, then put him in the title shot.
Yeah,
if he has trouble with Neil Magny, maybe not so much.
Right. No, if he, yeah, if he barely X out a victory or obviously if he loses, then forget it. But if he comes in there and he does, if he steamrolls him too, by all means.
Yeah, put him in there.
Because the rest of the top five is pretty much all people that, you know. We've got Gilbert Burns, Colby Covington, Luque, Stephen Thompson, Miles Vidal, Michael Chiesa. I mean,
I could see him and Thompson going.
Yeah, Wonder Boy would like that, but I'd just say that's...
He's coming off a loss, though. He lost to Burns, I forget.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, so there's not a clear-cut guy sitting there other than Vicente Luque, who's, you know, it is what it is.
Vicente Luque is here's the problem.
Chimaev's got crazy hype right now.
Yeah, Chimaev's got a bunch of hype, and it's not that Luque isn't a good fighter. Luque is a fucking dog. Like, straight, like, if people who have not seen him, I'm telling you right now, go look up Vicente Luque on YouTube and watch his highlights. That dude's a fucking dog in there. And every single fight I've ever watched him in is a fight of the night candidate. You know what I mean? So I do think if they hyped up the right way, they could build some buzz around a Vicente Luque fight with Kamaru Usman.
Of course, there's Leon Edwards.
I fucking forgot about Leon. Oh, my God.
I'm looking at the rankings and I'm realizing, Leon. Oh, yeah, there is Leon.
You couldn't have Leon Edwards in there, yeah.
Fucking the mystery guy everybody fucking forgets about. What is going on with Leon? Does he have a fight?
Yeah, he's fighting Masvidal.
That's right. I just don't see him beating Masvidal, getting him the title shot, if Chimaev goes in and beats Magny. I'm just not seeing it. Nobody cares. I don't know why.
I don't know why either.
But Masvidal's stock is so far down at this point. I mean...
Yeah. That's what Colby said last night. He said, when he loses to Leon Scott, don't cut him because I want him next. I was pretty good at that. Well, I think that rounds out a really good event for the UFC and a good return to what used to be just regular.
Solid UFC matchmaking, solid card. Mm-hmm. Very entertaining.
Very, very. Well, also on Saturday night, we saw Canelo Alvarez become the first super middleweight unified champion in boxing.
With Caleb Plant with a 11th round TKO. Now, it was a fight all the judges had him winning, because they show the scorecards after. But it was close.
Yeah,
I think the general
close.
Consensus was around like 95-93, something like that. And, that was the first time Plant had ever even been put down on the canvas
in his career. Twice in one round.
And he gets put down twice on one round. I mean, Canelo comes in with that overhand right, and then just those back-to-back uppercuts.
Mm-hmm. Blast him.
And he never got, Plant never got his feet back after that. Canelo smelled blood. Plant got back up. He walked around, head to his corner. He looked all right for a minute, and then Canelo just swarmed him again.
Yeah.
It was over.
You know what? And this just solidifies Canelo's place on the pound-for-pound rankings and his all-time ranking. You know what I mean? Like, one thing... You only slight you can have against him, I guess, is fucking... He doesn't really have, like, a rival or some crazy, like Triple G is his biggest rival, and that was really, like, I don't know. There's just, like, something that keeps
him... never had that feeling for me.
Yeah, just, there's, like, Canelo's, like, an all-time great for sure, but there's just something, a little something left in me that just... I don't know why, but, like, I can't really call him, like... I can't put him in, like, a greatest of all time conversation. Like,
really?
Mm-mm.
Really?
Mm-hmm. I do think he's great, but I don't think he's the greatest. And that's just where I'm at.
I mean, he is...
He's an all-time great, but he's not the greatest of all
time.
Yeah,
he's ranked as the best active boxer pound for pound
by
BoxRec, The Ring, the Boxing Writers Association of America, the TRB... TBRB and ESPN.
Yeah. But that could go the other way as soon as Tyson Fury fucking unifies his heavyweight belts.
Yeah, he's the only person I would say that'd be in the conversation right now.
Him
to
and
be
Tyson
the
Fury.
Better overall boxer would be him and Fury. But and unfortunately they're so far separated in weight, Fury would just pound him into the earth should they fight.
For sure.
And so we won't see that ever. But, I mean, Floyd beats him that one time way back in the day. He's got the draw with Triple G.
I thought he lost that fight, but yeah.
I think he's definitely an all-time great.
He's an all-time great, but I don't think you can put him in any conversation of the greatest of all time, is what I'm saying. There's so many great fighters that
I like to hold those, frankly, over until, like, when he's retired, I think is more when you can look back at that, because who knows what he's going to do from here. The guy moves weight around so much.
He does, yeah.
I mean, he's gone all the way up to, what, 175? Mm-hmm. And he fought Floyd.
At what?
Way back 47? When? 47.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Floyd couldn't make 175. Floyd would have to be bench pressing fucking 100 pounds to weigh 175. Yeah. I'm just saying, you know. I thought it was an amazing performance. I thought it really is a special moment in boxing history to have the first ever unified super middleweight. And just, it's such a story division to have somebody have all four titles now. While at the same time being considered the best active boxer on the planet by every major organization around, with the exception of, you know, the only other possible contention being Tyson Fury.
Yeah.
It's an amazing, amazing accomplishment for a guy that's not done with his career yet. And do you think he's going to hold on to these belts? Do you think he's going to try to go fight someone like Beterbov?
Maybe. I don't know. I don't feel like Beterbov really makes any sense for him to fight. Like, I think if anything, it would be going down and or meeting someone in the middle, like maybe like a Charlo brother or like shit.
It's definitely just, one of the Charlo brothers.
Yeah. I think Jermall is who he would fight. I just don't really see anybody giving Canelo any issues. That's the problem. Like, there's just nobody who I see really giving him any like, grief.
When you look down these list of fucking titles this man has held, it's absurd. Like, if I just kept naming them off, it would go on for quite a while.
Yeah. He's a fucking savage. But I don't think he's the greatest of all time.
You know, his shit goes back. I mean, he had the NABF welterweight titles, for goodness sakes. The WBC youth welterweight titles. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And those are relevant because he's just kept winning ever since then, aside from the Floyd Mayweather fucking thing.
Yeah, it's his only loss.
We're going up from welterweight up through light middleweight, super middleweight, all the way up to light heavyweight, beating Kovalov for the WBC title there, and then promptly just vacating it, piecing back down. See what I can do.
That's what I do like about Canelo is he's not afraid to risk. Like, he's down to bet on himself whenever.
Well, we'll see what's next for him, but a great, great moment for boxing. And he's fighting guys that, I mean, they're legitimate fighters. Like, he's unifying these titles by facing legitimate competition for them.
Well, yeah, they're champions in the world.
And they're both of them were undefeated going into that, weren't they?
Yep, mm-hmm.
I mean, so he's knocking out two undefeated champs, a guy who never even met the canvas before, and he's knocking them out.
Yep.
Fucking Canelo, man. I think the smartest guy he fought was Floyd. He took him out when he was young. I mean, Floyd wouldn't want any of that smoke now. If they could somehow find a weight class, Floyd would never come back and fight him again.
Because what? He fights a... What super middleweight?
68,
yeah. If Floyd came back, there's no way he'd be like, yeah, cut to 47 again. like, Jesus Christ. There's no way. It's not physically possible anymore. But hey, got him when he could, though. You know,
It was a busy night for boxing, not just because of that, but we also had, I mean, that undercard, I don't really want to get into it, but it was a pretty decent undercard on there as well. But we had the bare knuckle event in New York as well, which was headlined by their heavyweight title about between Arnold Adams and Joey Beltran, who was the current champ. Joey Beltran, of course, a familiar name to UFC and Bellator fans. Have I told you I bought that dude a beer once?
Yeah.
Yeah, all right. then I won't tell the story for the third time. Whatever. But at any rate, you know, this is a rematch for them. Adams had won on a doctor stoppage prior. Mm-hmm. And Adams is a solid fighter. You know, we discussed this last week. He was coming in with like 6 fights, which is a hell of a lot in bare knuckle.
Yeah, for bare knuckle, it's a shit ton of fights.
And he came in there and he got the job done and he wins the title from Joey Beltran by decision. Unanimous.
Yep. 49-46 on 2 cards and 48-47.
I don't really know what's next for that division because who I thought was going to be making his way, we're still not seeing, and that's Frank Mir.
Mm-hmm.
I thought he would have been here by now.
Triller shit.
And instead of that, he's messing around with the stupid new thing Triller's doing.
Yeah.
So, I don't know what's next for the heavyweight division there. But they do have the BKFC Miami card coming up next week, which is also BKFC 22. Mm-hmm. I'm a little confused by what they're doing, but whatever. They're getting events out a lot quicker now this past couple months.
Some of the cards are a little bit more watered down, but that's okay.
This one is another title fight at the top.
2 title fights.
Yeah, 2 fights. 2 great fights, actually. Hector Lombard versus Lorenzo Hunt for the 205-pound title. Yeah. And Hunt...
Or is that light heavyweight for them?
I just know it's 205.
Yeah.
I don't know...
Who knows what the belts are, but yeah, they're 205 belt.
Weight classes, but it's 205.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a fight that had to be made because if you watched, Hector win the title when he fought Joe Riggs, Lorenzo Hunt's the guy that showed up in the ring and promptly got two-pieced talking shit to Lombard after he won the title. Mm-hmm. So very interesting. I like it that they didn't waste any time making this.
Yep.
But we've also got Louis Palomino defending his 155-pound title against Dat Nguyen.
Moving up.
Who is the 135-pound champ and then vacates his belt because they can't come to an agreement.
BKFC.
Leaves, yeah.
Yeah.
Now he's back 20 pounds heavier, which is interesting because he's never been that heavy. He's a professional boxer. He didn't box that heavy. And in some of the preview footage that they had shown during this last event, he's put on a lot of weight.
Yeah, and it's interesting, too, because his style is more of like a speed and like finesse kind of thing. So I'm really curious to see how that like translate now that he's like carrying a little bit more weight. Like, is he going to slow down? Is he going to be maybe focus more on his head movement, less around like the in and out type deal? But yeah, I'm really curious by that fight. Louis Palomino is a fucking savage and a real veteran of the mixed martial arts game. So this should be a very interesting fight.
Yeah, he had some great wars with Justin Gaethje back in the WSOF.
Yeah.
And he's done quite well. He's transitioned nicely into bare knuckle. This will be a stiff challenge for him, though. I think if Nguyen retains the speed that he has at 35, I think it's his fight to lose. I don't think that Palomino's striking.
Yeah, but when have you ever heard of someone gaining 20 pounds in 7 months and being the same speed and same like level and leaving the fucking promotion and shit? There's just so many red flags with everything that's happened in the last 7 months with him.
Yeah. I don't know who to pick in either of these fights, but I am going with Lombard.
Going Lombard and Louis Palomino.
I would just think that Palomino's probably going to win there, but
yeah.
I'm excited either way for both those fights. And, you know, Britton Hart is making her return fight on this card as well against Pearl Gonzalez.
Pearl Gonzalez.
Who really shined in her debut a couple months back. So much better than so many fighters' debuts go.
Yeah.
A lot of people have a hard time making the transition because it's a different feel.
Yeah.
And she seemed to click right into it, much like Rachel Ostovich did the same thing. Whereas, like, you look at someone like Paige, has had a hard transition. And a lot of MMA guys, it takes some time. It takes them a minute to get
a different game.
To feel it out. But Pearl jumped right in. Like, I remember discussing her victory. Her 1-2 punches were unbelievable. Like, she was on fucking point. And I think that straight 1-2s and in-and-out movement right now where BKFC is the key to victory in most of these divisions.
Yeah.
Maybe a little bit different when you get up to the more experienced guys at the very top. But against Britton Hart, I think that she's going to piece her up with that. This ain't Paige VanZant. Pearl actually really took to this a lot better, and I like her to go in there and make a statement against...
Yeah,
you know, that's
too.
Joey Beltran's wife, actually.
Yeah.
Britton Hart. Mm-hmm. And he's going to go in there and make a statement against Miss Beltran.
Yeah. I like Pearl as well. I agree with everything you said. And Pearl's always been a dog.
She's exciting, too. Watch, her walkout stuff will be fun, too. Her walkout stuff was fun this last fight. I like it.
Yeah.
You know, all these things these fighters weren't allowed to do in the UFC, which is, you know, where what they find to be exciting and entertaining and do things on their walkouts they want to be exciting and entertaining, they're allowed to do in BKFC.
Yeah.
Which is exciting.
Exactly.
Speaking of BKFC, we got some fighters coming on, several, over the next few weeks. So if you enjoyed our interview with Connor Tierney in the past couple episodes, then be sure to stay tuned over these next few weeks. We have several fighters from the roster coming in to have some chats with us.
Yep, yep. And then also, so we'll switch back to mixed martial arts this weekend. We got Max Holloway taking on Yair Rodriguez at the Apex. What do you think?
I think the fight is a very entertaining bout. I think Max Holloway will most likely win, but I don't think it does him any good in the standings to get back to a title shot. I think he's still in this weird limbo.
I think this is a number one contender fight.
I think it is if Yair wins. I'm not seeing much for Holloway getting booked against Volkanovski again so soon, but we'll see.
If he does what he did to Calvin Kattar, to Yair Rodriguez, he's getting a title shot. If it's a close fight, I agree with you. He'll probably have to win one more. But if he goes out and just shows that he's just better than the division, and him and Volkanovski are 1A and 1B in this division, then so be it. But I think that's what ends up happening. I think Max goes and just dominates all five rounds.
Yeah, I don't think Ayer has a prayer against him. I think Ayer's a fun fighter, but I don't think he's a high-level fighter.
I think he's high-level, but I don't think he's well-rounded. Like, he's a high-level kickboxer, but I don't think he's a very good grappler. I don't really feel like he's very good, like, you know. I don't think he's very good in the clinch or, like, grappling-wise. But I do think where things could go south for Max would be a situation where he's able to stay at distance and uses kicks, because even in the Volkanovski fight, we saw really the difference the first time they fought was the kicks, you know. So I feel like the distance at which this fight takes place will dictate who controls it. If it's, you know, two guys standing right in front of each other, Max is going to win that game every time. But if Yair is able to keep some distance and, you know, come in and out, and, you know, uses kicks to set up his bigger shots. Because one thing that Yair does is he's real flashy, and he does like a lot of like crazy shit. Like, we saw, everyone has seen the Korean Zombie knockout and all these crazy knockouts. We knocked out BJ Penn and all these.
I thought he was losing up till that knockout.
Well, yeah,
as well,
Korean
too.
Zombie.
Just to be clear,
Korean Zombie, when he was losing a 5-round fight. And fucking literally knocks him out in the last 2 seconds. It was ridiculous.
I mean, he gets the victory, but I'm just saying, he couldn't hang with Korean Zombie.
Yeah.
And I don't expect him to hang with Max Holloway.
I don't either. I think Max masterclasses him.
Which puts the UFC in a weird spot, because honestly, with the Yair being ranked third, Ortega, for some reason, is still ranked second coming off the loss to the champ.
Yeah.
I mean, they need him to win, because you got Holloway first, Ortega second. Holloway's lost two, Ortega's lost one.
Unless you have them right
there. Chan Sung Jung is, you know, down there in the fifth spot. Calvin Kattar after that, having just lost to, you know. Then we're getting down to all Arnold Allen, Josh Emmett, Chica. Like, these aren't.
Yeah.
I don't see title shots for these guys anytime soon. So it's in a weird spot for the division.
Yeah.
But
well,
you put the division on away out of the picture, though. It'd be an exciting fight that I'm looking forward to.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with that. Well, I think that about wraps our show up for today.
Thanks for tuning in, everybody. If you're brand new to the show, you can find our podcast wherever you get your podcasts distributed, from Amazon to Spotify to Google and Apple and everywhere else in between, plus on a couple radio stations. You can find all that information in one handy spot.
Swapandme.com, where you can head over there, click the gear button, buy a t-shirt.